the peace of great doors be for you. Wait at the knobs, at the panel oblongs. Wait for the great hinges. The peace of great churches be for you. Where the players of loft pipe organs practice old lovely fragments alone.
You are listening to the voice of Carl Sandburg reciting the opening lines of his poem
Stains
For You,
clover leaves on
a page from this afternoon's edition of Anthology. This is Fleetwood. Every Sunday afternoon at this time, WNBC, in cooperation with the Poetry Center of the YM and YWHA, bring you Anthology, a selection of readings from poets past and present and the music to accompany their poetry. Today our guest is Theodore Sturgeon, science fiction writer and poet laureate of the realm of verse classified for future reference. Poetry, to quite a few people, has a rather spinach-like connotation. They don't particularly like it, but they feel it's good for them. We may not be able to change their outlook completely on this new series of programs, but we do hope to make poetry not only palatable, but entertaining. To help us achieve this purpose, we're pleased to have the cooperation of the Poetry Center and its director, John Malcolm Brennan. The center is a division of the Educational Department of the YM and YWHA, Lexington Avenue and 92nd Street, which this month is celebrating its 88th anniversary. Salutations from Anthology. The Poetry Center was inaugurated in 1939 by Dr. William Kolodny as part of the general program of cultural activities at the Y. Its premise, to humanize poetry by presenting the poet reading from his own works. In 1939, 25 people attended the first reading, which was held in the lounge of the Teresa L. Kaufman Auditorium at the Y. Today, almost 600 subscribers and an average attendance of 700 fill the auditorium for each reading. Among the many admirers of the Poetry Center and one of their stellar attractions is this gifted English poetess, Dr. Edith Sitwell. A little over a quarter of a century ago, Dr. Sitwell wrote a series of rhythmic exercises in poetry which she called Facade. One of the most familiar of these verses is the spirited and colorful Polka, read for this recording by Edith Sitwell herself.
See me dance the polka, said Mr. Wag like a bear, with my soft hat and a whisker that trolla tracks the fair. With the waves seem chiming paper, I dance the polka. There stand Venus, children, their gay frocks, maroon and marine and stare. To see me fire my pistol, through the distance blue as my coat, like Wellington Bar and the Marquis of Bristol, bars big great trees float. While the wheezing hurdy-gurdy of the marrying wind blows me, to the tune of Annie Rooney, sturdy over the sheets of the sea, and bright as the seasman's patty, with zinnias candid up still, is Mrs. Marigot's jacket, as she gapes at the indoor still, where dawn in the box of the sailor, blue as the decks of the sea, Nelson awoke, crowed like the cock, and back to the dust sang he. And Robinson Crusoe, Rousseau, the bright and foxy beer. But he finds fresh isles in the negress's smiles, foxy, dotsy dear. As they watch me dance the polka, said Mr. Wag like a bear. In my top hat to my whiskers, that trolla tracks the pair. Trolla, trolla, trolla.
Edith Sitwell reading from Façade to the music of William Walton. We intend to present the entire series on an early edition of Anthology. We'll give you the date well in advance in case you'd like to have a copy of the poems available at the time. Checked for future presentation, too, is a thoroughly delightful version of Camille Saint-Saëns' Carnival of the Animals, played by André Castellanets and his orchestra, with new verses written by Ogden Nash, spoken with a crisp relish by Noel Coward. For example, on the subject of kangaroos, the Messrs. Nash and Coward have this to say.
The kangaroo can jump incredible. He has to jump because he's edible. I could not eat a kangaroo, but many fine Australians do. Those with cookbooks, as well as boomerangs, prefer him in tasty kangaroo meringues.
Kangaroo meringues. Thank you, Noel Coward and Ogden Nash, for one of the many captivating word pictures we'll enjoy when we hear the Carnival of the Animals in its entirety. In the pages of Anthology, we'll find many poems of America, by Americans, and for Americans. One of the foremost spokesmen in this category is Carl Sandburg. This is his voice. This is a poem he calls For You.
Wait at the knobs, at the panel of loans. Wait for the great hinge. The beat of great churches be for you. Where the players of loft pipe organ practice old lovely frags alone. The beat of great books be for you. Stains of pressed clover leaves on pages. Bleach of the light of years held in leather. The peace of great prairies be for you. Listen among wind players in cornfields, the wind learning over its old music. The peace of great seas be for you. Wait on a hook of land, a rock footing for you. Wait in the salt wash. The peace of great mountains be for you. The sleep and the eyesight of eagles. Sheet mist shadows and the long look across. The peace of great hearts be for you. The valves of the blood of the sun. Pumps of the strongest wants we cry. And the peace of great silhouettes be for you. Shadow dancers alive in your blood now. Alive and crying. Let us out, let us out. The peace of great changes be for you. Whisper, O beginners in the hills. Tumble, O cubs. Tomorrow belongs to you. The peace of great loves be for you. Rain soak these roots. Wind shatter the dry rock. Bars of sunlight, grips of the earth, hug these. The peace of great ghosts be for you. Phantoms of night gray eyes. Ready to go to the fog star dumps, to the fire white doors. Yes, the peace of great phantoms be for you. Phantom Iron Men, Mothers of Bronze, Keepers of the Lean Clean Breed.
The poetry of the theater will always be most welcome to the pages of this radio anthology. The poetry of the modern theater, represented by such distinguished names as T.S. Eliot, Christopher Fry, Maxwell Anderson. The classic theater, dominated, of course, by the writings of William Shakespeare. And certainly among the more literate and popular interpreters of the Bard of Avon is Sir Laurence Olivier. But hold, methinks I hear my Lord Hamlet approaching now. Let us withdraw and listen.
Be? That is the question. Whether it is nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to take arms against a sea of troubles, and by opposing, end them. Natural shocks that flesh is heir to. 'Tis a consummation devoutly to be wished, to die, to sleep, to sleep. Perchance to dream. Aye, there's the rub. For in that sleep of death, what dreams may come when we have shuffled off this mortal coil must give us pause. There's the respect that makes calamity of so long life. For who would bear the whips and scorns of time, the oppressor's wrong, the proud man's contumely, the pangs of despised love, the law's delays, the insolence of office, and the spurns that patient merit of the unworthy takes, when he himself might his quietus make with a bare bodkin? Who would fardels bear, to grunt and sweat under a weary life, but that the dread of something after death, the undiscovered country from whose bourne no traveller returns, puzzles the will and makes us rather bear those ills we have than fly to others that we know not of? Thus conscience doth make cowards of us all, and thus the native hue of resolution is sicklied o'er with the pale cast of thought. And enterprises of great pith and moment, with this regard their currents turn awry and lose the name of action.
And so, a few glimmerings of what to expect on Anthology in the months ahead. We hope to bring you modern poetry. Poetry by Dylan Thomas, Robert Frost, W.H. Auden. We want to find new young talent and ask them to read their poems to you. We want to bring you great poems which have been set to music, the poems of Rudyard Kipling and Bobby Burns. We want to listen to humorous poetry, limericks, the whimsy of E.E. Cummings, and the wry comments of Dorothy Parker. Each week we'll have a guest autograph a page in our anthology. people with an interesting viewpoint on or about poetry. Although still a young man, our guest today already ranks among the top 10 writers in the field of science fiction. Within the past few months, he's had 2 books published, E Pluribus Unicorn, a collection of short stories, and More Than Human. His name is Theodore Sturgeon, and he's a resident of Congers, New York, where he lives with his wife, his son Robin, a new litter of police pups, and a fabulous tank of tropical fish. You also drive a hot rod truck, don't you, Ted?
Yes, I do, Fleetwood. Next to my wife and Robin, of course, that truck is my pride and joy. It's an ancient panel truck that I have been rebuilding. Outside, it's disgraceful. Inside, from the radiator, literally to the taillight, it's all new. And as time goes on, I add more to it. Now, it already has 50 more horsepower than it had when it was born. It'll have another 50 or 60 before I'm through with it.
This, I don't know about our listeners, but this strikes me as a very strange thing, that a poet, and not just a pseudo or would-be poet, but a recognized poet, should be so handy at building, practically, a hot rod truck. This doesn't fit in with the conventional picture we have of poets.
I've run across that comment before, but in my experience, I found that most people like musicians and poets and whatnot seem to be pretty good with a monkey wrench or a soldering iron as well. And I think this follows. People like that are generally very much taken up with how things are made and how to make things. And it follows through what they do with their hands as well as what they do with their minds. My own chief interest, as you know, is in science fiction. Science fiction and poetry have this in common, that science and poetry imbue all of our lives, all of our thinking.
Well, in other words, if I could write some poetry, I might be a little handier around the house, huh?
That might follow.
I don't seem to be very good at either, so maybe I'll sit down tonight and see what comes out. I took a poetry course, I remember, once in college. I was never one of these children, you know, who wrote poems, and so I thought, well, something's wrong with me, as is witnessed the fact that I can't build hot rod trucks either. And so I took a poetry writing course. This was supposed to teach me how to write poetry, but you can't learn it in class, I discovered, because I still can't write poetry.
I think that that works the same way as the ability to use tools comes up. They say that some people can never learn to use tools, but you can learn to see how it's done.
Well, I have perhaps a greater appreciation of, if nothing else, at least just the mere labor that goes into creating even the smallest, the least type of a poem.
Yes, that is true. The mechanics of poetry are extraordinarily complex. I think that the gear that you have here to put this program out on the air, all those knobs and dials and switches and that great mass of spaghetti behind those panels there, is probably far less complex than some of the internal mechanism of a poem.
I don't doubt it a bit, but I don't understand those wires either. I'm sorry. I just take them for granted.
Well, that would be good radio where you don't see any of the works, and I think that goes for good poetry, too.
Well, tell me, what about your tropical fish? I haven't visited you in Congers, New York, I'm sorry to say. I hope to. These tropical fish were heard about before I even heard about you.
Well, I have in my living room a very large tank. It's 22 gallons, which is a coffee table. And concealed under the overhang of the top of this coffee table is a whole control panel. It controls a whole set of lights of various colors inside the tank itself. It has a device to turn the audio off. My television set has another switch to control the little air pump that goes on and off. I can do all sorts of things just twiddling around amongst those controls.
Well, this is very interesting, but actually I suppose we should talk about your poetry here since this is a poetry program. Essentially, you're a science fiction writer, which immediately provokes the question, what are you doing on a poetry program?
Well, I'm very, very happy to join science and poetry in this respect. As I mentioned before, they do have a lot in common, particularly in their effect on our lives. Like the famous amateur gentleman who realized with great surprise an expert told him that he'd been speaking prose all his life. Mm-hmm. He didn't realize that. We're very much under the influence of poetry. Anybody who has lain back in a railroad train and found himself thinking along with the clicking of the wheels,
mm-hmm.
is under a poetic influence. You hear children, little girls playing skip rope, and they have a whole series of little chants all of their own. These things are poetry. The famous wheels of industry, the sound of jet planes and so on, are all, in essence, poetry. They are of poetry, and they are what poetry comes from. Science is having its effect on us, on all of us, including that part of us which is poetic.
In other words, you didn't, so to speak, get onto the science fiction bandwagon, although you would rather write poetry. You were writing science fiction before people even started using the term.
Yes, I was writing science fiction 15 years ago or more.
I haven't had a chance to read any of your longer works. I have before me two beautifully bound books, the two we've mentioned, the More Than Human, which is published by
Farrar, Strauss,
and Young. I mispronounced that before. And your E Pluribus Unicorn, which is published by the same...
Abelard.
By Abelard. And More Than Human comes out in a pocket...
A Ballantine 35-cent
edition. So if you like beautiful books, I guess you buy the Farrar, Strauss, and Young, and if you want to save money, you buy the other one, huh?
That's right.
Well, the only thing I had a chance to read was this one part of your E Pluribus Unicorn called Bianca's Hands, which I thought was very, very intriguing and very beautifully written. Besides, how did you ever get such an idea?
That was a most intrusive idea. I wrote Bianca's Hands when I was about 19 years old.
Well, just a minute. Perhaps I'd better mention what the idea is. It's about the beautiful, physically weak, but otherwise expressive hands of... Is she a moron, or...?
Yes, she's an idiot.
Yeah, an idiot. I never do use those terms right either. But which sounds, I'm sure, just on the mere mentioning of it, will strike most people as a very odd subject for a short story. It's actually even a short story, I guess, isn't it?
Yes, well, that was... I suppose poetry as such can be as intrusive almost as a loud noise. This interrupted me in my thinking. Mm-hmm. I had been writing at the age of 19 for long enough to know I could never sell a story like mm-hmm. this. Ultimately, I did, and I'm happy to say it won a prize in England.
Wonderful.
Not here.
Well, we were mentioning poetry terms earlier, and you came across, you threw
yes.
one at me that I never heard of
before.
I wanted
to give you an example. This is what I think could be called poetry. It's in the body of the story. I want to stress the fact that this is not set up in lines.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of the prose thing. And it runs like this. He wandered the hours away by the bank of a brook, watching the sun on the face of the chuckling water. A bird came to circle him, flew unafraid through the aura of gladness about him. The delicate tip of a wing brushed his wrist with the touch of the first secret kiss from the hands of Bianca. And it runs on like that until the end of a paragraph. Now, this is purposely cast in a poetic form.
Not the sort of thing one is apt to run into in science fiction, I must say. Ordinarily. You have something else I'd like you to read for us, too.
Oh, yes, Ben. The poem from my story, Thunder and Roses. This was a love song within the story. When you gave me your heart, you gave me the world. You gave me the night and the day, and thunder and roses and sweet green grass, the sea and soft wet clay. I drank the dawn from a golden cup, from a silver one, the dark, and the steed I rode was the wild west wind, and my song was the brook and the lark. With thunder I smote the evil of earth, with roses I won the right, with the sea I washed, and with clay I built, and the world was a place of light.
Thanks very much, Ted. Please come back and see us again. You will, I hope.
Thank you, I will.
30 days hath September, April, June, and November. Remember the doggerel? It has any number of endings. All the rest have 31, excepting February, which has 8 and a score, till leap year gives it one day more. Well, no matter how you count it, this is the final day of February, a month of importance in American history because it marks the birthday of two great patriots, Abraham Lincoln and George Washington. We feel, before we step over into the gusty days of March, that we should pay parting respects to February on this, our first edition of Anthology. We call on one of the great ladies of the American theater to voice our tribute. We hear her lend a new dignity, a new beauty, to a poem written by another famous American woman, Julia Ward Howe. Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Helen Hayes.
Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. He is trampling out the vintage where the grapes of wrath are stored. He hath loosed the fateful lightning of his terrible swift sword. His truth is marching on. I have seen him in the watchfires of 100 circling camps. They have builded him an altar in the evening dews and damp. I can read his righteous sentence by the dim and flaring lamp. His day is marching on. I have read the fiery gospel written burnished rows of steel. As ye deal with my contemners, so with you my grace shall deal. Let the hero born of woman crush the serpent with his heel, since God is marching on. He has sounded forth the trumpet that shall never call retreat. He is sifting out the hearts of men before his judgment seat. Oh, be swift, my soul, to answer him. Be jubilant, my feet. Our God is marching on.
Our God is marching on.
In the beauty of the lily, Christ was born across the sea. With a glory in his bosom that transfigures you and me. As he died to make men holy, let us die to make men free, while God is marching on. Glory, glory. Hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. His truth is marching on.
With Helen Hayes' thrilling recitation of the Battle Hymn of the Republic, we close our first edition of Anthology. Our thanks again to Theodore Sturgeon for being with us. Anthology is brought to you with the cooperation of the Poetry Center of the YM and YWHA on Lexington Avenue at 92nd Street. Tomorrow night, the center will present the distinguished poet and lecturer, Sir Herbert Read. Anthology is produced by Steve White, written and directed by Draper Lewis. This is Fleetwood inviting you to be with us next Sunday at 3. This is the NBC Radio Network.